We are New York, talking about what matters to you on New York's Talk Radio 77 WABC. Now, here's Walter M. Sterling.
At 4 past the hour, we are live. Oh my God, can you believe it? We are live. This is exciting. Saturday night, 9 to 10, every single Saturday night, it is a privilege to be with you. And the big news this week was how many college campuses seem to be in trouble because they let their students come back soon, including many in New York State, including Syracuse University, where my beautiful, perfect daughter is ensconced. Hello, Dorothy. How are you doing tonight?
Hi, Dad. I'm good. How are you?
Well, I'm excited to be talking to you, as you can imagine.
Yeah, very exciting.
Now, I saw in the New York Times, of all places, that there was much upset among the administration about students gathering in the quad. Apparently, they weren't supposed to gather in the quad. How many people actually do you think gathered close to each other in the quad?
Well, according to my eyewitness, my friend made a stop, like walked by and saw about 300 people, she said, like at least. And one misconception was that people weren't wearing masks. She said most people were wearing masks. It was just so many people.
About 300 people gathered in the quad. Do you think they were close to each other? I know that quad.
Oh, they were. They were.
And I know that quad at Syracuse University. It seems very large. 300 people should be able to have spread out. Why were they close together? Was there a movie? What was going on?
Well, no. They were partying. They had. I'm sure they had drinks, and I'm sure there was a lot going on. But you know, they gathered together. But I mean, 300 people is a lot. It was a lot.
So Dorothy, who's at Syracuse University, she's been quarantined in her dorm, in the Lawrenson dorm. Now, you were there the first 5 or 6 days, and you were locked up in the dorm like a prisoner. What were the rules when you were stuck in that dorm? What were the rules, Dorothy?
Well, we couldn't socialize with anyone outside of our pod. Our pod was basically our floor. We had to wear a mask at all times. We couldn't go out to eat. We couldn't order in food. We had to eat the dining hall food, which was delivered to us, which is nice, I suppose. But it was disgusting. And we had to, we only had an hour of outdoor time. It was really like a prison. We only had an hour of outdoor time. And luckily in the last week, they gave us 2 hours of outdoor time. And you couldn't leave campus. And you had to follow a specific path for your outdoor time.
Well, what was particularly annoying to me was for the 2 extra weeks of quarantine that you were required to attend at the school before school started.
And pay for.
$1,000.
$1,000.
I had to pay $1,000 to pay for you to sit in your dorm and not be able to go outside.
Yep. You got that right.
Then there's a rumor that a number of the kids who were on the quad this week, against the rules, were suspended. Is that true?
Yeah, I think they have suspended 20 kids so far.
26 kids suspended for, wait for it, going outside. Oh, you went outside. Well, you sign this form. You're out of here, buddy. Wow.
Yeah.
What is the mood on the campus today? When does class actually start, Dorothy, at Syracuse University?
Classes start on Monday, the 24th. The mood is no one wants to go outside. Everyone's afraid. There's a lot of just rumors, disappointment. It's just a very interesting atmosphere. Everyone's trying to adapt while also adapting to a new way of life. And it's a very challenging process for a lot of us.
Freshmen, first time at college, first time away from home for an extended period, sitting in a dorm, not air conditioned. Not air conditioning. Daddy paying $1,000 extra for nothing that I can see. I can't actually see what the benefit is. And then you were supposed to be there for quarantine for 2 weeks. Then after about day 6, the governor lifted the quarantine from where you came from, And oh my God, so this was the biggest scam. And then I got in touch with the administrators, the hacks, the bureaucrats at the university. And I said, well, now that the quarantine's been lifted, I assume she can walk around and live a normal life. And they said, No. We want to make sure everything's fine, and many states have had to be relisted. I'm like, get out of here. Crazy talk.
Yeah. It's a whole lot of crazy talk.
How's the cafeteria food?
It's not that bad. I had a really great breakfast today.
What was
really
that?
Good eggs and bacon.
Eggs and bacon.
And a very good biscuit and some hash browns.
Now, your roommate moved there from Queens. She's from Queens,
yeah.
Right? How's that going to have a roommate? It's the first time in your life to have a roommate.
She's great. It is weird falling asleep with another person on the other side of the room that you don't know very well. And you just met, you know? It's very strange. But it's all a process, I guess.
Does she snore?
No, my box fan is way too loud for me to hear anything.
And does she have unusual wall hangings, odd posters, anything disturbing on a satanic level?
No,
satanic decorations?
No. Not on any satanic level. She has some cool wallpaper.
Black candles?
No black candles.
Pentagram rugs?
No. I'm thinking of getting one. What do you think?
I think you should, but like in teal.
Oh, in teal. Oh, wow. Oh, how fancy.
Let me tell you about the first roommate I had. Get this. Whatever your roommate's doing, it's nothing compared to this. The first roommate I had, all he did all day, he was like super smart, so he never actually went to class.
Mm-hmm.
He was obsessed with Silver Surfer comic books. There was a comic book character called the Silver Surfer. It was a surfer who had superpowers. And he had every copy. There were hundreds of them under his bed, under his desk, but he never got off of his bed. Instead, he laid on his bed all day, didn't go to class, ate nonstop Clark bars. That's all he did. He ate Clark bars all day, and he read Silver Surfer comic books. And then, toward the end of the semester, he did what many, many people who have been in close proximity to me have wanted to do. He stood on the bed one night, stared at me, motioned his arm in the position of a gun, and said, you know, sometimes I just want to have a gun and shoot you. Out of nowhere, he just goes, I just want to have a gun and shoot you. That was my first college roommate. And then he went back to bed, eating a Clark bar and reading Silver Surfer. I don't think I ever heard him speak ever again. Do you think your roommate is going to do anything like that?
I really hope not. I don't think so. I really hope not. Now you have me worrying.
Her parents took you to dinner, right?
Yes, they're sweet. I really. Oh, they listen to your show.
How can that be good for us?
That's a really good point.
I mean, what is the upside for us if they listen to the Walter Sterling show on WABC? What is the upside to that?
I'm not sure, but her father listened to our interview from last weekend and really enjoyed it.
Well, listen, I really enjoy these updates. I hate it when I hear theoreticians talk about, well, you know, the impact of quarantine on students and the impact of the plague on our society. No, I want to hear it from people who are suffering like you. Thank you.
Oh, I'm not suffering, but yes, all right.
You're not suffering?
Well, I feel like,
You complain a lot to your mother. I'm just pointing out you complain a lot. Right. I love you, Dorothy. Thanks a lot.
I love you, Dad. Thanks.
Okay. Good night.
Bye-bye. Good night.
All right, this is WABC with Walter Sterling, and we have too much to do tonight. Once again, I have too much to do.
This is a perfect spot for a sponsorship billboard.
You got that, Mr. Advertiser? You want to sponsor these family moments? That was a hallmark moment that we just had. You know, you usually don't hear that. All right, let's you and I talk about the real thing going on. That's the real thing going on, the kids in college. And everybody says, don't you miss her? The answer is no. My wife and children are at the Outer Banks. I have two older children, a 15-year-old who wants to get her nose pierced, and a wife and an 8-year-old, and then the other one in college. And I have the house to myself ready for 2 weeks. I have it to myself for 2 weeks. You know what that means? I can do anything. If I'm sitting in this room and I want to go to that room, I do it. If I'm watching this channel and I'm tired of it, I can turn it off. I do not have to watch endless British mysteries that I have no interest in. After I hear 10 minutes of people speaking British, it all sounds the same to me. They all seem to be solving the same mystery, always surrounded by wealth and castles and fancy trains. How could people surrounded by wealth and castles and fancy trains in British mysteries on BritBox, how could they have any problems? How could they have a nanny, a staff, a cook? How does that qualify as problems? They don't have any problems. Not having a MetroCard, that's a problem. Forgetting the MetroCard, and the only place you can buy it is on the other side of the station with the gates up, that's a problem. Or taking a Manhattan-bound bus where they actually do collect the fare versus a Queens bus where they're just happy to see you. Whole different thing. 9:15 at WABC. Now, I want to talk about this very interesting problem. let me just die and then come back to life. Years ago, when I lived in the city, at first, people from out of town would say to me, aren't you afraid to live in the city? Do you feel safe in the city? How do you feel in the city? That's what they'd say to me. How can you live there? How can you live there? And I'd say to them, I know where to walk. If you live in the city, you know where to walk. You know what to avoid. I could walk down this street, and then I could go to this street, and then I'd feel safe. Remember? If I crossed, I knew on this block there were empty stores and empty storefronts, probably best to cross the street. Do you remember that time in the city? Here's my phone number. I am live on WABC, 800-848-WABC. Let's give Izzy something to do. 800-848-WABC, 800-848-WABC. When I first moved into the city, people would say, how can you live there? Don't you feel in danger? I'd say, no. Once you live here, you know where to walk. That's what I'd say. I knew where to walk. And I hadn't even thought about that until this week, where I was thinking about the changes in the city over the past 3 months. I used to know where to walk to feel safe. And then I realized I hadn't thought about that in 10 years. It's been 10 years since I've had to think that way, where I had to have the secret map in my head of the safe routes to walk. You realize not long ago that 14th Street and 3rd Avenue was a terrifying place. On one side of the street was a whorehouse. The other side of the street were porn shops. That's 14th Street and 3rd Avenue. Now there's an apartment building you can't afford and a Five Guys burger joint on the other side of the street. That's a whole different world. Then I thought, it's come back. I now have to think again about where is it safe to walk. I'm like, oh my God. Then there are people saying, well, the city will come back. Won't the city come back? And I'm saying to you, it won't come back. It won't come back unless some very specific things happen. I'll tell you what those things are. Number one, you have to realize the difference between today and the 70s and the 80s is one specific thing. The specific thing is high-speed internet. Today, we have high-speed internet, which means that any thought job, any thought worker can work from anywhere. If your job is to think up cool ideas, advertising campaigns, public relations campaigns, to be very serious, write serious things, give a lecture. You know, 5 years ago, if you were a college professor and you wanted to do a remote lecture, it was hell. The guy from the AV department or the IT department was useless. It would never work. 9 times out of 10, it didn't work. You'd be in Cincinnati. You'd want to do a lecture at NYU. It didn't work. Today, no problem. Anybody can give a lecture from any point because of high-speed internet. It's a completely different world. That's part one as to why it's never going to come back. That's part one as to why it's going to be extremely difficult to make a comeback. But there's more, and I'm going to share with you exactly what needs to happen to get the city to come back. But I'm saying it isn't going to happen. My number is 800-848-WABC, 800-848-WABC. And then I also have a very secret conversation that I had this week with Cousin Bruce Murrow that I will share with you. And we will talk about the incredible importance of the Robin Bird Show. This is 77 WABC. Math, people who do spreadsheets, venture capitalists. No one has to go into a physical place. It was necessary to go into a physical place because it was impossible to meet effectively without buffering now, without having to meet with Mr. Buffering Now. Remember that? A few years ago, mostly what happened online when you tried to do video was buffering now. Those are the things that have to happen. I think what's going to happen with all this office space, billions of square feet. No one's going to pay $100 a square foot anymore, or $50 or $45. No one's going to pay that anymore because no one has to come to work. There are no; those are not factories. Those are places where people think and sit around, look at each other and have coffee and then drink heavily at lunch. Those places are unnecessary. That time is over. I think what's going to happen with those spaces is they play along. Those will become recreational spaces. Those will become amusement spaces. What spectacular floor plans there are for amusements. I've seen a lot of people what are those called? Escape rooms. I've seen a lot of people go to those escape rooms, but they're in real buildings. And I think the opportunities for that is vast. Just vast. And exciting and fun. But no one has to go to work. You don't have to fill up the McGraw Hill building anymore. That building's empty right now. Most of the office buildings in New York City still have not opened up yet because most of the workers are like, we're not going. The people at Google are saying, they're not coming back to work till next year. I think what will harm Facebook more than ever they can imagine is the investment they just made in that post office. In the main post office, oh my God. This will be great for us. No, I don't think it's going to be so great for you. All right. I'm Walter M. Sterling. This is 77 WABC. I have a lot of excitement coming up for you in just seconds. WABC.
We are New York, talking about what matters to you on New York's Talk Radio 77 WABC. Now, here's Walter M. Sterling.
934 in the city with Walter M. Sterling. Here's my phone number, 800-848-WABC, 800-848-WABC. Four broadcasters this week have lost their jobs because each of them said one or two words wrong. They lost their jobs because they said one or two words wrong. Inevitably, if anybody raises the issue and suggest maybe there was a different way to handle it, they are immediately admonished for supporting that sort of language. I am not. Hear me clearly. I am not supporting that kind of language. But I am supporting the concept, you ready for this, of forgiveness and sincerity in an apology resulting in forgiveness. How did we become so unforgiving? We'll share about that coming up in just seconds, but it's summer, which means it's time to go into the beer barn. You know what a beer barn is. You drive in, a guy has t-shirts, lanyard chains, flashlight keychains, and they put beer in your trunk.
It's summer, and that means it's time for Life in the Drive-Thru Brew. Stuff your drunk with beer. Life in the Drive-Thru Brew. The secret is in our slogan. Drive through and you're through.
There is a rumor that Meghan Markle and Prince Harry might come through here with their limo.
In a beer barn? I don't think so. They can just buy the brewery.
We're brewing a beer that we call Harry and Meghan's Windsor Knot. And in this beer, we're using barley grown on the Royal Farm here in Windsor Great Park to represent Harry's background. And we're using hops from the west coast of America, from the US, to represent Meghan. And so we like to think that this beer, Harry and Meghan's Windsor Knot, is truly a marriage of the ingredients that we've used to produce it.
Windsor Knot beer.
Who knew? Who knew?
Next time at Life in the Drive-Thru Brew.
Who knew?
Word Car speaking.
All right, 937 at WABC. Here are these poor guys. Mike Milbury, Tom Brenneman, Kyle Cornell, who I know, and John Folk. They all said one or two words on Twitter or Instagram on an open mic that they weren't aware of. They got fired. And they begged forgiveness. I mean, practically on their hands and knees, they said, I didn't mean to say it. I had no idea I was being offensive. I knew it was a mistake. I didn't know my mic was on. Whatever it was, they were instantly fired. Now, I want you to imagine this. I want you to think about this. Twitter, Instagram, Facebook, a cue line on a microphone. Consider this. Think about all the times you've been in a bar and the things you've said about the boss or your friends or that person over there, all the things you've said in passing at a bar. How many of those would you want to be public? How many of those would you want to be stuck with for the rest of your life or your career? Think about that. Twitter, Instagram, a mistake on the air, all of those things are the new bar. That is the new bar. That is the new golf course. That is the new country club, where you just say things to your friends. Twitter, Instagram, that's the new bar. That's where they live. That's where we live today. We live on social media. We're going to say stupid things. But there's a pattern to the big trouble with Twitter and also with what happened today on with Kyle Cornell at WTAM. There's a pattern, and here's what it is. Broadcasters, people who do what I do, people who have voices like this, people who do what I do, we're used to an express train. It's just moving. And our job is to get to the next thing. And we get to the next thing. We get to the next thing. And then every now and then we say something stupid. And we know when we've said something stupid. And we just keep going. The biggest mistake you can make, the thing you're taught in Broadcasting 101, is if you make a mistake, keep going. Don't make it worse by stopping. When you put it on Twitter, when you put it on Instagram, you put it on Facebook, or, and this is the case with one of these guys, when you put it in an on-air promotional announcement, it freezes time. It stops time. And then people can go back and listen to it and go back and listen to it. And that's what happened to Nick Cannon. He did it in a podcast. Podcasts, promos, anything that is stopped, it seems to me there are people to review that, to check that content before it goes out. And they are equally culpable. They never seem to get in trouble. It's only the poor, suffering talent. Nick Cannon had many people reviewing that podcast before it went out. A promo has many people reviewing it before it gets on the air, or should. And if it doesn't, then they're all responsible. But everybody's making too big a deal out of all of this. And again, don't you get mad at me. I am not defending what they said or wrote or typed. No, no, no. Because I don't, I pray for me that it doesn't happen. I got three kids. But the fact is, it happens sometimes. The overreaction is stunning, immoral, unacceptable. Robert, you're on WABC at 800-848-WABC. Hi, Rob.
Hi, sir. It's so amazing to finally hear a show that I feel levity and not heaviness while I'm listening to it.
It's because I'm not that smart. It's because I'm not that smart.
And one point I wanted to make was, segregation. I've lived in all neighborhoods in the city, and I live in Roslyn, I lived in Manhattan, I lived in Jamaica. People do not live together. There is still segregation. People from uptown need to move downtown and live together as a people, not black neighborhoods, not white neighborhoods. Everybody needs to live in a single place where we can all afford things and see that everybody's normal. If you went to a white person or a black person today and asked, have you had dinner with a Caucasian or a black? The answer is going to be no. I am white and I've had tons of dinners with black people because I grew up in Jamaica, Queens. And it was wonderful. They were like family. There's none of that. Everybody's just scared of everybody. And that's the problem.
Robert, in Jamaica, Queens, do they use the recipes from Jamaica, the island?
No, they don't.
No, I'm asking for a reason, because I never had better food than I did in Jamaica, the island.
Yeah, I've been to Jamaica, the island.
It's incredible, isn't it? It's great food.
It is, yeah.
And then I realized why, as a diabetic, I realized why it's great food. Are you ready? Tons of sugar. Just freaking tons of sugar in that food, but it's okay because I'm on vacation.
Yeah.
Hey, Robert, thank you for liking my show. I really appreciate it. Thank you for calling 800-848-WABC, 800-848-WABC. That's my take on it. My take on it is that nobody should be fired for saying something stupid on Twitter. The other part of the equation is that broadcasters, you won't believe this, people who talk on the radio, people who make newscast, they are compelled almost to a quota to send out tweets. Now, if you're on a 50,000-watt radio station or a Class C FM station, look it up, or if you're on a big TV station, that should be enough. I think that should be more than enough. Well, you know, you have to send out tweets. Really? Why do I have to send out tweets? I'm sending out constant, outstanding Class A entertainment. Isn't that enough? Isn't it enough for me to have entertainment like this?
It is a subtle art, collecting fares, keeping traffic barely moving. James, are you ready for your first class in advanced toll collection?
Yes, but I feel unworthy.
First, embrace the power you have to touch the lives of millions of motorists on your toll road.
They all seem to hate me.
No, that wave of hate is all in your mind. Your customers are paying for roads that were paid off long, long ago. You are admitting them to a transit museum.
Huh. A museum.
You get it. That's the power of practice. Your uncle, who got you the job, would be very proud.
And that's your toll taker masterclass. I actually testified once at a Port Authority hearing on the tolls at the tunnels. I went there to testify against a raise in the price of the tolls on the tunnel. And I told them this. This was the only time that the head of the Port Authority actually expressed something, is when I stood up to testify that the tolls should not be increased. We don't need to take in more toll money because the roads were built in the 30s. Therefore, they're paid for. Stop. Just stop. Stop it. I looked at him and I said, do you realize if you really want more money, why would a toll taker, when I hand them a crumpled bill, test this yourself, hand a toll taker a crumpled bill, take the bill and crumple it. It is legal currency, but take it and crumple it and then hand it to the toll taker. And you know what happens to me every time I try to do it? They hand it back. They don't want it. They don't want to deal with the crumpled bill. It's beneath them to deal with the crumpled bill. That's my experience. When I told the head of the Port Authority that, he got horrified. Like, this is the, you. He turned down 10 bucks. Somebody turned down 10 bucks coming to our corrupt organization. How is that possible? You can't do that. They turned down money. Oh my gosh, that was in 5 hours of hearing. The only time the guy expressed emotion was when he heard the possibility that somebody didn't take their money. Oh my gosh, he was horrified. But these people who send out tweets, now, mind you, a bad tweet actually caused a company to lose a radio station. They sent some idiot on the air, put out a tweet. It caused such an uproar, they actually lost a radio station. And over again, this week, four different broadcasters either said something stupid or put out a tweet or an Instagram or something that it was deemed inappropriate by the community. Inappropriate by the community. And what was the result? The result was they apologized, and meant it, because I know those guys, and meant it, and they got fired anyway. And I say, nobody in any profession should get fired for anything other than their job. If they're doing their job, they shouldn't get fired. Years ago, there was a person I worked with who was having an affair with a fellow employee. They were both employees. It was as consensual as can be. And I mentioned it to my boss. I said, you know, these two are having an affair. And he looked at me like it's none of our business. It had nothing to do with the guy's job. It had nothing to do with her job. And that was the end of the conversation. That was it. That's how it used to be handled. Now, the vice chairman, he was a COO, or the vice chairman of NBC Universal, he was tooling around, and he got fired. No, or he had to quit, or something like that. But it was viewed as inappropriate, can't happen, horrible. There was another big studio head, same thing, tooling around, inappropriate. Da-da. It had nothing to do with their jobs. Nobody said they did a bad job. Didn't compromise the company, didn't compromise the price of the stock. It used to be that if somebody was a drunk, an alcoholic, I couldn't even address it. I used to be a suit. I used to wear wingtip shoes. I used to look very official. I used to speak like this. It was a big deal. I mean, they thought I was. And I couldn't even discuss that with an employee. Now you better put them on the back of a flatbed truck and take them into rehab. I love New York City police detectives. I love New York City police detectives. My favorite one is a man named Vic Ferrari. He retired as a New York City police detective. He has the best cop stories.
You're a dinosaur, Sipowicz.
I'm a dinosaur.
You jeopardize that collar because it sticks in your throat on first grade.
It sticks in my throat, how you got it?
Every white guy in the department with second grade thinks he should have gotten my grade promotion. Half of you guys think I got it on my back.
Hey, Walter, let me tell you a great story from my new book, Grand Theft Auto, the NYPD's Auto Crime Division. So in the mid-90s, I was assigned to an auto theft task force, and we were working quite a bit with the LoJack tracking device, which is installed from authorized dealers in a vehicle, and when someone reports their car stolen to the police, we're able to track the car and recover it and hopefully make an arrest. So with LoJack's newfound success, they decided to branch out to overseas markets. So one afternoon, I got a phone call from our LoJack rep who asked if he'd be able to bring over a couple of guys from the Moscow Police Department that were touring the United States. So the following day, he brings these guys over, and it was four of the scariest looking dudes you ever saw and their interpreter. None of these guys spoke a word of English except for their interpreter, who was probably a KGB agent. So we went out and we showed him how the LoJack device worked, and we gave him a tour around the police station. And you could tell these guys had watched a lot of NYPD movies and they had a lot of questions. So when we got to the question and answer segment, the interpreter started asking questions like, how many people have you killed? Or, you know, how many, you know, what type of gun would you use to stop a car? I says, well, we can't get away with that over here. We're not allowed to shoot at cars or, you know, kill people indiscriminately. Then one guy asked, is it difficult to get a confession? And he's pounding his hand to his fist. So I had to explain things like Miranda warnings and the police aren't allowed to smack around suspects to get confessions. So when it was time to go, the Russians had these medallions for us on lanyards. They were really nice. And it was something commemorating Moscow Police Department's 100th anniversary. And typical NYPD fashion, we had nothing to give these guys. So I felt bad. Me and another guy ran upstairs to the locker room. I got a black garbage bag and I began filling it with nightsticks and hats and helmets and shirts that were just laying around the locker room. I brought it downstairs and these guys were like kids in a candy store. Before you knew it, they had ripped a bag open and they were fighting over this stuff. So we're watching them, and they're like kids, you know, putting on the hats and posing with the nightsticks. And my partner goes, "No, one of these guys are fighting for toilet paper over there." I said, "Dude, I'm telling you right now, you are lucky these guys don't speak a word of English. They would tear you limb for limb." But, you know, they gave us the nice medals, and we gave them some nice memories, and everybody went on their way.
Mr. Advertiser, your message goes here.
Wouldn't this be ideal for you? Isn't this exactly where you want your message after a New York City police detective shares an amazing and entertaining story? I think so. All right, it's 9:51, 9:51 at WABC. Coming up in seconds, what have I got for you? I have something special. The best Cousin Brucey story. That's in seconds on WABC.
We are New York on New York's Talk Radio 77 WABC. Now, here's Walter M. Sterling.
9:54 with Walter Sterling. Good to be with you. It's an honor to be on the radio with you. If you want to get in touch by email, I don't recommend it. I would much prefer if you call, but an email will do okay. Every email I get gets answered. It's WalterMSterling@gmail.com. No company will give me their email. I am therefore stuck with Gmail, WalterMSterling@gmail.com. It's been pretty much the curse of my life that no matter how much I benefit a company, no matter how much I benefit an individual, I never get to be connected with them. They don't say, "Oh yes, we're very proud that Walter's working with us." This has been true since middle school. In middle school, I was pretty close with a kid, Maplewood Junior High. And we'd, you know, hang around in the hallways. And then one day I'm standing there talking to him. Other kids came up and they go, "Oh, hey, you're friends with Sterling? You're friends with Sterling?" And they made fun of him for being my friend. And then he kind of slinked away and pretended he wasn't my friend. This is my life. And then at the companies I've worked at, that I've always been proud to work at, I've had very good jobs. I've been a lucky, lucky, lucky guy. When they have reunions, I am never invited. I have never been invited to one of the reunions. Now, the psychologist might say, "Well, Walter, why don't you think about why that might be?" No, I don't want to think about why that might be. Why should I have to think about that? Why that might be when I can eat pizza? I'd rather eat pizza than have any deep retrospective, introspective thoughts, right? Who wants a sausage pizza? And when did they stop selling sausage by the slice? When did they stop selling sausage by the slice? Why am I a pariah for saying, "I'll have sausage pizza"? Ooh, ooh, ooh. Let me tell you a Cousin Brucey story. Cousin Brucey. I've known Cousin Brucey all my professional life. I hired him at Sirius Satellite Radio. Me. I said, "Come over here now. We're going to hire you now." Believe it or not, most of the people there had no idea how powerful and important he is. But the thing about Bruce Merle that's unique, I have had the privilege of knowing most of the big-time disc jockeys, the real disc jockeys, the ones who hit scotch under the turntable, those disc jockeys. Bruce is the only one I have known who is better in person than he is on the air. He comes up to you, he puts his arm around you, he calls you cousin. He's got to be 7 feet tall, he's got an expensive sports jacket, he puts his arm around you, calls you cousin, and all is right with the world. He's a remarkable man, and he's been there for me when I've been in jams. You know, when I've had tough times, he's been there for me. He has given me scripts on how to get out of trouble. What you don't know about him that I'll share with you the night that he debuts is he's a brilliant businessman. Most disc jockeys are terrible businessmen, horrible businessmen. They think that the rent deposit is an investment. He is a brilliant businessman. I'll share some of those stories with you coming up the night that he debuts. David, you're on WABC in Newark, New Jersey. How you doing?
Hey, I'm doing good. How you doing tonight?
I am so happy to talk to you. Do you go to Five Points in Union for hot dogs?
Excuse me?
Do you go to the Galloping Hill Inn, Five Points, Peterson's for hot dogs in Union? Do you go there for hot dogs?
No, I go by it all the time. My son lives right around the corner, but in fact, it was suggested to me by my older brother that I should go there, but it's always on the wrong side of the street. And, you know, I always have someplace I'm leaving to, I'm going to, so.
But face it, Davey, you've been on the wrong side of the street many times in your life.
Yeah.
All right, what can I do for you? What can I do for you?
I'll be down there tomorrow. I'll stop in.
I insist. Do it. Hey, listen, you'll sound like a native if you say, I want one complete. Tell them you want a complete hot dog. Call it a complete, okay?
Okay. I usually go, Mike, because I grew up in Clifton, and the big thing was the hot grill.
No, it's nonsense. It's garbage.
Oh, I always liked the hot grill.
It's garbage.
For Rutt's Hut, but... Anyway,
Rutt's Hut is for tourists. That's for tourists. Rutt's Hut's for tourists. All right, David, how can I help you?
Well, you were talking about the police came, the Russian police.
Yeah, that Vic Ferrari told that story. Vic told that story.
Oh, Vic told that story. Well, anyway, I saw an episode on Cops where the Russian police had bought a bunch of Ford Crown Vic police cars.
Right.
To use at the police force. And boy, they were having fun, you know, because, you know, the little crappy cars they drive in Russia, you know, were no match to keep up with a V8 Crown Vic. And these guys, not only would they catch them, then they would push them over the side of the road till the car was upside down, you know, and then drag the guy out of the car and beat the crap out of him.
I mean, this is crazy. Get rid of it.
He's right. Well, was this exciting for you? I think it was exciting for us. I have a Facebook page. It's called Walter M. Sterling at Facebook. That's my Facebook page. I put up pictures that no one else would dare put up because I don't care about social media. I'll be brave. I'll be a brave, brave broadcaster. And you and I can communicate by email. I answer every email. And I have a Twitter account that's carefully monitored by 18 nuns and priests, by the Our Ladies of Sorrows Church staff. South Orange, New Jersey, they monitor my tweets, so there's no problem with them, because we don't want any problems with them, do we? Oh, my God. Samantha, you're 8 years old. I'm proud of you. Meredith, I'm proud of you. Remember that the greatest gift that you and I can be given is a request for help. This is W.